Good morning and welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel. And we have a great panel assembled before you. They're not actually in the studio yet, but I'm sure they will be soon. I think they're just getting their coffee. Mm-hmm. Probably just, you know, getting ready for the day because they know it's going to be a solid hour and they're just revving up. So joining me in the studio right now is the executive editor of the Poughkeepsie Journal, Stu Shinsky. And Stu, it's always a delight to have you here. And we thank you very much for making the trek up for the media project and for this show. So we thank you very much.
Thank you. A pleasure, as always, to come up.
Always wonderful to have you with us. Also, Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo is in the house. Good morning. Thank you very much.
Of course. Thank you. Good morning.
It is a delight to see you, and I assume Alan will be on his way. Did you see him out there?
I did not, but I wasn't looking for him.
Okay. No. You're making a beeline to, well, yes, you guys were doing the show, so I'm sure Alan will be in. All right. Let us begin with the stories of the day, and we'll talk about, do you have a request to start off, Rosemary?
No, I don't really like the baseball story.
Oh, okay. Well, Stu's all over that.
Yeah, you're all over that. Okay, you handle that, too.
Stu's all over that. So let's talk about the Afghan pact. This is an interesting story. Secretary of State John Kerry announced on Wednesday that the United States and Afghanistan had finalized the wording of a bilateral security agreement that would allow for a lasting American troop presence through 2024 and set the stage for billions of dollars of international assistance to keep flowing to the government in Kabul. The deal, which will now be presented for approval by an Afghan Grand Council of Elders, I like that, the Grand
the
Council
elders.
Of Elders, starting on Thursday, came after days of brinkmanship by Afghan officials and two direct calls from Mr. Kerry to President Hamid Karzai, including one on Wednesday before the announcement. So we have a date of 2024 and ultimately looking to have some security presence in Afghanistan for the foreseeable future.
Could somebody just tell me, this being Alan.
Good morning, Alan.
Thank you.
I introduced you.
Okay, good. I just had another job to do, and I did it, and now I'm here.
But so relieved.
Could somebody explain to me what's really going on? I mean, what we just heard was the story, but what's really going on, I don't know. I mean, you know, first of all, I'll explain something to myself while I'm speaking, and that is that when you say, I'm going to go to the, when the president of IBM says, I'm going to my board of directors to ask their permission, you know, if he's any good, he doesn't have to ask their permission. He's just doing it. And when he says, when Karzai says, I'm going to the Council of Elders, come on, you know, give me a break. But what really is the status of the negotiations? He's got a problem, right? His people don't want us there. Is that
correct.
Right?
That's mm-hmm. correct.
His mm-hmm. people don't want us there. So he's got to put up a smoke screen, which says we're going to make them pay by apologizing and by doing this
make
and that
I'm
in
sorry.
Order mm-hmm. to the Council of Grand Elders to do it. So why do we have to be there is my question.
Why do we have to be in Afghanistan at all? Oh,
yeah.
That's an excellent question. We don't.
We only have an hour, though.
Here's my take on this whole thing. I'm a big Hillary supporter, but I do not understand how Hillary was hailed as a wonderful foreign secretary of state. Yeah. And I'm not sure what exactly she accomplished, whereas John Kerry has gotten nothing but criticism. And so far, when you look at the record, he's gotten some sort of movement in Iran. He has made Israel and Palestinian officials at least think about sitting at the table again. And now he's pulled this offer, is in the process of pulling it off. Hasn't he done more in his short time than Hillary did in her long time?
Well, it depends, it seems to me, on the not only international political situation, but what's going on in the country. So, for example, there is a very strong Israeli lobby. You've got Netanyahu, you know, really angry, and he's coming out and he's throwing all kinds of bombs, you know, at our negotiations. So is Hillary the better Secretary of State in being able to balance what the national needs are in terms of the negotiations over international stuff? or is Kerry out there doing things that will cause the president even more grief with his critics in the Congress, for example?
Harper's has a wonderful article by Alexander Cockburn this month.
Oh, I saw that.
Yeah, it's really good. And it's about Kerry. And it's about this very dynamic that Alan is talking about, is what is the role of the Secretary of State? It's really, in the view of Cockburn, a domestic job. And they do the bidding of the president, and they carry out a national policy. Kerry very much has a worldview. He has wanted this job. He has sought it for years now. And he sees it as doing things that are needed in the world.
Well, when Hillary was there, it was a whole different set of circumstances. What, you know, Kerry is in essence almost a cleanup role now, where Hillary had to lay all of this groundwork. So, you know, is it a side by side comparison? Maybe not, but the question is, what's the end game? Are we getting out, and when?
And there's also cleaning up. I mean, depending on what your view of the Bush administration was, of coming in right after that, where we were at odds with much of the world and working on those relationships, which I think you can point to and say that that was an accomplishment on her.
Yeah. No. Please do not hear anything of what I said as criticism of Hillary, except for Benghazi, which I think she mishandled. But overall, I do agree that she was a spectacular secretary. But she didn't really accomplish very much. As you said, as Stu, it's just, you know, she was laying the groundwork. She was doing necessary, important work. That's not spectacular. What Kerry has done is almost like, wow, look at this. These are high-level negotiations that he has begun or carried out in three really difficult spots in the world so far.
Well, as I say, or as I should have said, Kerry ran for president and didn't make it. Hillary is going to run for president.
Well, she ran for president, didn't make it either. Well, she didn't get as far as Kerry.
I
want to be technical.
No, I stand corrected. You're exactly right. However, I do think that she is still running for president. She was running for president when she was Secretary of State, knew it, and did what was politically palatable in order to preserve, you know, her reputation. Whereas I think Kerry wanted to be president, couldn't be president.
And this is his last job.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's
exactly
right.
Yeah, that does make a big difference. Yep. You're right.
Yeah, now they're talking about we're going to be there until 2024.
Yeah.
I can't even conceive that far down the road.
How old will you be? In 2024.
Do I have to disclose that on the radio? Probably about 174.
24. Well, you may not be, but I will.
So, I mean, it's 11 years.
Yeah, it's a long way.
It's 11 years.
And things will change.
Those troops over there will be more young boys, more American boys, who really don't we have a better way to use their lives.
I mean, the line in the Times is, after a war that stands as the longest in American history, the security agreement defines a training and counterterrorism mission in Afghanistan lasting at least 10 more years and involving 8 to 12,000 troops, mostly American.
But what does it mean? Does it mean that Afghanistan is a subscription state of the United States and we have to be there in order to control it? Or does it mean we don't trust them because we think the Karzai, who has been accused of corruption, right?
a little bit.
We'll go out and make a deal with somebody we don't like, because remember, Afghanistan has always been that place that is open to the Russians. Now we're talking or hearing about the Chinese, and we better have our troops there, because if we don't, I guess to answer my own question of earlier, if we don't, then somebody else will be in charge, and we don't like that.
And it's also just a strategic place to be, because if they leave, well, what would happen? But don't forget, we still have troops in places from World War II.
We do.
We still have troops around the world from Korea. We still have troops around the world from Vietnam.
Boy,
so having
a
presence in Afghanistan, it sounds like whenever there's a conflict, we're always just going to leave a few thousand people there for eternity.
Why do we have troops in Germany? That's a very good point.
The food? I don't know.
The beer.
Well, you know, I feel you want to be in spots around the world, right? To have bases and...
I was in Germany.
I mean, it's what their mission is. I mean, we're talking about, in this case, what we're being told, a security and a counterterrorism mission, which
defense,
is different than just having
around the world.
Well, I think the reason they wanted us in Germany, I think they wanted us, you know, in Germany to protect them. At that point when we got there, we were there, Roselle and I, after the wall came down, And there were still 350,000, I believe, Russian troops there, and they didn't have a place to go back to. So sometimes there's this whole we went to that camp. It was one of the most interesting things I have ever done in my whole life because there were big pictures still. Communism was dead of Lenin, big posters and things. So it takes a while to catch up. Mm-hmm.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will delve into other topics of the day. We welcome your comments, as always. It's Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Rosemary Armeo, Stu Shinsky, and Alan Chartok are here. We welcome you. Roundtable at WAMC.org.
Support comes from East Heaven Hot Tubs and Paradise Spa, Northampton, Massachusetts, offering private hot tub room rentals with indoor or outdoor rooftop tubs, massage for couples and individuals, East Heaven for reservations. Adams Fairacre Farms, Poughkeepsie, Kingston, Newburgh, and Wappinger, fresh seafood, Hereford beef, farm fresh produce, local and imported cheeses, specialty groceries, adamsfarms.com. And Cafe Capriccio, Chef Jim Rua, working to preserve and maintain the traditions of Italian cuisine and hospitality since 1982 on Grand Street in Albany, New York. CafeCapriccio.com.
Welcome back to our roundtable panel this morning, and as always, we welcome your comments, roundtable at WAMC.org. Our second topic this morning, Senate Democrats poised to block filibusters of presidential picks. We spoke about this yesterday, the so-called nuclear option, which seems to be in the works. Senate Democrats are on the verge of moving to eliminate the use of the filibuster against most presidential nominees. Aides and senior party leaders confirmed this yesterday, a move that would deprive Republicans of their ability to block President Obama's picks for cabinet posts and the federal judiciary, and further erode what little bipartisanship still exists in the Senate, which
That's not a big loss. No.
So we were talking about this yesterday. Right. We were saying, well, what is going to happen? And now it seems that they're poised to do that. So what's the fallout?
I'll believe it when I see it. We've been at this point before and they pulled back. I said yesterday, I'll repeat, I think it's a good idea. It's good for the people. Yes, Republicans lose out now, but they'll be in power again someday. And then the Democrats will lose out and the American people will win in both cases.
It's very simple, cyclical. What happens now? Well, it is. Happened in the past.
Stu, but Rosemary makes an interesting point here, and that is that there's a lot of credibility loss already.
Yes.
We have had this thing three times already. So if they, the Republicans are going to sit back and they're going to say they're not going to do it.
Right.
They're not going to do it.
I'm skeptical. I think it's another brinksmanship maneuver.
A senior aide to Harry Reid said in the New York Times is quoted as saying, "We're not bluffing." That's the quote. We're not bluffing.
Yeah, and he needed anonymity to say that.
Yes, and he needed anonymity to say that. Right.
Yeah.
Don't quote me.
Barring any unforeseen breakthrough on blocked judges, we're not bluffing.
I love it. There's a statewide reporter around here for one of the bad newspapers who once was quoted, I heard him on the television one night, and he said, I have a source, and he's famous for never giving sources. And so he says, I have a source, and he's a good one.
He's a good one, believe
so
me.
So you think about
Those
it.
Those are the best types.
So if you think about it for a second, how about all the other ones?
Yeah, well, don't read too much into it, right? The threat that Democrats could significantly limit how the filibuster can be used against nominees has rattled Republicans. Senator John McCain, the Arizona Republican, who has brokered last-minute deals that have averted a change to filibuster rules in the past, visited Mr. Reid in his office on Thursday, but failed to strike a compromise. So what do you think's being discussed in those meetings?
The same thing that always happens in these things. They're looking at, we'll give you this judge, you give us that judge, and they make a deal. Yeah.
Why isn't it working at this time, or do you think it will eventually?
I know why. Because they decided in the beginning that Obama may have won the election, but he wasn't going to be the president. So they weren't going to let him have any of the perks of the presidency, including appointing judges and appointing his people, and they were going to give him a hard time on everything. And good, we'll just make sure that he knows he's the like the guy in Toronto. He's the president in name only.
Mm-hmm. I sort of agree with that. I guess I would put a fancier spin on it and say that the Republicans appear to be engaged in a long-term strategy to set up a judiciary that's balanced,
that's
Republican mm-hmm. and Democrat, or conservative and liberal, and that's part of they want to pare down that district court in the District of Columbia, which is extremely powerful. It handles all the federal cases and White House cases.
And that includes and make the Supreme Court, too.
Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, the Supreme Court is coming to this, too, because Harry Reid's proposal would leave the Supreme Court separate. In other words, we can have full and fair debate on anybody going there. And the Republicans say, if we get your deal, then we're using it on the Supreme Court too.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So. And of course, the Democrats do this too. So
yeah.
I mean,
this
it's
politics.
But
this
is politics. Do it as much is the question. As we said yesterday, it all started back in the day with Bork. At least that's the way the Republicans see it as having been. They're still getting even for Bork.
Yeah.
And that becomes their rationale.
Yeah, that was 30 years ago. Robert Bork, his yes. nomination.
Yes.
Well, it's like they figured out the strategy that, oh, wow, look what we can do with Bork. And then it has escalated. I think you're right. It's gotten worse and worse and worse. So that we have the spectacle that we're seeing right now where completely qualified, excellent judges are being kept off the court.
Who was the best president of the United States ever? George Washington.
Abraham Lincoln.
Well, Lincoln always gets
votes. Roosevelt gets votes.
Lincoln Roosevelt.
But I'm only—
Is this a tangent?
No, it's not a tangent, because I'm saying that in his farewell address, what he talked about was the evil of party.
Washington.
Yes, Washington. Okay. And boy, have those chickens come home to roost. He's exactly right. Because what his point was, and he's right, there is such a thing as governance and there's such a thing as politics. But when the politics drowns the governance, that was the potential.
It would be so nice if politics didn't win and public service did.
Yes.
Wow.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah, and
if I were tweeting, that's the quote I would take. That's good. That's really good. Yeah.
But I mean.
Well, you know, and Eisenhower, if we're going to talk about farewell addresses, a Republican president that, you know, I have overlooked, but I've begun reading about him lately.
That's fascinating.
That was
an amazing
farewell speech. And he
it
says,
was.
Yeah, this was a general, you know, the world's most famous general. And he gives a speech saying, watch out for the military, industrial, and he added, congressional complex. And boy, have we seen that, including
by the way, we play that quote again and again and again on this radio station. Yeah.
Fascinating.
I'm interested in I know we're going to go back and we're going to talk about Kennedy when we come back from the break.
Sure.
But that whole thing about what's fascinating about Washington, I'm reading a book on Washington now. But, you know, that whole thing about the greatest president, being the first and setting the tone for the rest is really, to me, an incredible thing.
Well, to this day, everybody on the two-term thing go back to Washington.
Yeah,
and only having two terms. The only one we know who didn't do it, of course, was FDR, and that was an extraordinary circumstance.
The whole continent of Africa could have advanced if there had been one person with the strength of Washington to just say, okay, I'm getting out. Nelson Mandela is the only one. He was of advanced age.
Yeah.
So
we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation, and we welcome you to join it as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. A reminder, you can also comment on our webpage. You can go to our Facebook page. You can tweet us at WAMC Roundtable. At WAMC Roundtable. We will be back after this news break. Welcome back to our roundtable panel. It's a delight to have you with us. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here, executive editor of the Poughkeepsie Journal. Stu Shinsky is here, and University at Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo. Good morning.
Hi. So spirited this morning, Alan.
Yeah, very spirited. It's been a long 12 hours, hasn't it?
It has. They put me under, I had an endoscopy operation. Not that you want to know about that yesterday. Not operation day, just look down every once in a while. And they give you drugs. And then, you don't quite remember things.
Okay, but tell the rest of the story.
Okay, go ahead. Give me a hint.
So okay, so they put it. So he goes in. He has an appointment at like 1 o'clock.
Yeah.
He goes in, and what do most of us do when we have an endoscopy and they put us under? We have somebody drive us home and we go to bed, right?
Right.
No, not Alan.
I came.
Alan comes back to interview the Attorney General of New York State. So there he is at 4 o'clock, looking very chipper, I must say, talking to the Attorney General.
Yes, and you know, and then you talk back to me.
Yes, well, that's. And from what I heard in the news clip, sounded great.
Yeah, he's good.
Yeah,
he's a very buttoned-down guy, very much in command of himself.
Quite an advanced team.
Yeah. Oh boy, I never saw so many people walk in this building.
We've had governors in this building with not as much. No, it looked like the traffic. Army. Yeah.
And I couldn't pick out who the troopers were and who the what was.
Yeah,
and
you're not supposed to.
It's the ear things there. You know, the wires down the back of the neck. Yeah, but
It's so the guy's so interesting in that. In that, I know this is a diversion.
This is a tangent, but it isn't.
But it is so interesting because clearly we know certain things. We know the governor, Andrew Cuomo, does not get along that well with Schneiderman. We know the governor doesn't get along that well with the comptroller, DiNapoli. And so, you know, it is our job when we are, because yesterday it was fascinating. We had somebody in here, Joe, yesterday who's a flack for one of the big guys who walks in and out of the place every once in a while to do a commentary. And he said, this is interesting. Schneiderman's going all around the state saying that they just got a billion dollars. They just got $1 billion for the J.P. Morgan.
Okay.
At the same time, Schneiderman does that. The very morning, Andrew comes out with a statement: "I'm going to cut the taxes in New York State by $1 billion."
$1 billion.
Yeah, same exact amount. So I say to Schneiderman, figuring any good person would ask him this question. So did he do that because you just got $1 billion? And he's sort of, no, it was all understood that this money, where this money was going and the rest of it. Fascinating stuff.
It is fascinating stuff.
If you live in New York. If you live in Massachusetts, maybe not so much.
Well, I think the mechanics of it are still fascinating. Yeah. All right. So we know we are lucky enough to have Stu Shinsky with us this morning, the executive editor of the Poughkeepsie Journal. Stu will also be on the Media Project this week, and it is a delight to have him here. So let us make hay while he's here, and he can tell us what cool stories are coming up in the Poughkeepsie Journal.
Well, we would direct you to the Poughkeepsie Journal today in print or PoughkeepsieJournal.com online, and you will see a story that's actually a very important story for our region. We just got past the anniversary of Sandy. 1 year later, how things have changed, what has happened, all the devastation. Well, IBM, which is our biggest private employer in Dutchess County, is
still
teaming up with... Still, yes, yes, yeah, almost 8,000 employees.
Right. And that's down, the 8,000 is down from...
From a high of, that I know of personally, about 30,000.
Wow.
Man. In the late 80s, and it might have been even higher than that.
Which proves what to me? Not to you, because they're potential advertisers, but to me, here's what it proves. It proves you can't put all your eggs in one basket.
No.
And Pittsfield did. And Schenectady did with GE. Mm-hmm. And look what it got them.
Yeah. And the conclusion to that sentence is?
I don't know, because I'm under drugs still from yesterday.
Well,
yeah.
Are we putting all our eggs in the basket in Albany?
And you mean to,
with Nana. What do you think, Rosemary? You've become quite an expert on this subject.
I still have tons and tons to learn, but... Boy, this is a tangent. I'm sorry about this.
That's too. Okay.
We've wandered far afield, but yeah.
We'll let you finish your sentence, too. I promise.
Okay. Nano is and has been invested in by the state as a job-changing, life-changing, just a conversion, moving into a new century and a new time. The hope is that Nano being here will bring in new jobs and jobs of the future, so that it'll go on and on.
Now, did we rob?
That's the hope.
Did we rob Nano from Austin?
No.
No.
What
no.
did we rob from Austin? We got something from Austin.
That's Global Foundries.
Oh, yeah.
They're related. I mean,
it's all related.
See, that's sort of the thing. Yeah. You have Nano here, and you're creating like this critical mass, and that it'll all come together, and that funding will come in. So, yeah, you do rob from one area to the next.
And then they maybe, as you say, in the great future, maybe they rob from us again. Maybe they get a pot of money together.
And now it's a global market, so it could be, you know, Belgium robs from
New York. one of the Arab states.
Yeah, it could be.
Well, you know what's fascinating is that there was a time in this state where, especially in Dutchess County, where 30,000 people worked at IBM. Now it's down to 8. Stu, as you were saying.
Well, the folks who are still at IBM.
Oh, yeah.
I just wanted to bring it back. I'm sorry. And
IBM is a powerhouse, and I should add, it is far from the extent of the economy in Dutchess County, which has diversified amazingly.
Yeah.
IBM is teaming up with Marist College, and they've invented some software that will use the computing cloud to, in moments, change the information technology structure of certain institutions, things like that, in a moment. Where during the storm, before the storm, there wasn't a lot of time to redirect servers and things like that. This technology will, in essence, almost with the flip of a switch, and I may be being a little too figurative with that, where they can redirect it and save all of the infrastructure and preserve all the computing power in the event of an immediate crisis.
Well, doesn't the cloud do that already?
The cloud does it already, but it's only done in a very select way. This will be a much more easier, accessible way for more businesses and companies to do it.
Well, that is so fascinating, and I don't want to go afield again. But I saw I saw something in the paper this morning that it really interested me, and it said somebody was advertising and saying, "Buy your personal cloud."
Yes.
Personal cloud, so that you don't have to send it to the everybody cloud, because I'm concerned about the everybody cloud. Once you send it up there, God knows what, everybody has access to your stuff, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think
I think they do already.
I don't think there is a personal such, because a personal would have your, it's still going to be part of a larger cloud, right?
It's through your internet provider. Like, you know, the Gannett company who I work for, we have different IT setups and things like that. And there are ways where, you know, our servers in our Poughkeepsie building are based out of Maryland and Deer Lake, Arizona. So if there's a calamity, and we did this last year when Hurricane Sandy came around, we were able to switch our servers to, in essence, protect our IT resources during a storm.
Huh.
Yeah.
Above my pay grade.
This isn't unplug it, throw it on a cart, and wheel it out of the building anymore.
Yeah.
No.
Now it's basically the information never reaches that piece of machinery because you directed it to some service somewhere,
Now you guys have been very nice to me and, you know, sort of condescending, but you have ignored my fear.
How are we condescending?
Well, because I said something and nobody reacted to it, which was...
How's that condescending?
Well, I don't know. Okay, forget it. I ever said that. Okay, but the fact is that I am worried when everybody is sending it to the cloud, right? And now the NSA looks at everybody's information, can look at everybody's information, we know that, so that doesn't the cloud become big pickings for God knows what?
But I don't think it's any. I don't think it's any different if it's on the ground or it's in the sky.
Right.
I mean, it's either here wired or up there unwired, and either way, it's going through a place that collects that information.
Should I be relieved?
Well, no. I don't think it makes much of a difference.
If you think of it as a staircase, this is one step higher. And then in a year from now, there'll be another step. It'll just keep evolving. I mean, from the typewriter to the mobile phone, think of the evolution of keyboards and something that simple of how information is conveyed and transferred and transmitted. This is that next step. But yes, will hackers have an attempt to try to break into a cloud? They'll try to break into a can of tuna fish if they think they can make money off of it, okay?
Another tweet.
Yes.
Get going, Rosemary.
But, yeah, it is an IT essential these days to embrace these technological breakthroughs. Otherwise, you're going to get caught.
Okay, so back to IBM, who, by the way, I want to make our sincere thanks from WAMC because, as you know, they're a matcher.
Yes.
For people who work for IBM and contribute to WAMC, I think it's still matched by
IBM. Yes, and IBM has many philanthropic presences in Dutchess County.
Right, but you know, okay. Well, now I'm done.
So there's that. And I also wanted to mention one other thing very quickly. I've talked on this show before about problems with drinking water safety in Dutchess County. Mm-hmm. And we have had numerous problems in different water districts and cities and towns with safe water. We're putting on a drinking water safety forum at Marist College on December 3rd that is free and anyone can attend.
Can you bring your water with you in a vial and have them tested?
We're not doing testing, but we will have people there who can tell you what's in your water, why, and what shouldn't be in your water. We have a representative of the Federal Environmental Protection Agency coming, Dutchess County Department of Health. New York State is sending someone along. We're doing this because people have become greatly concerned that they can't drink their water.
As well they should. We were just in Greece. We were drinking bottled water when it turned out we didn't have to be drinking bottled water, but I think, you know, this is a little bit of American chauvinism that no matter where
Americans,
they go,
Americans have their bottles of water every place. It's insane.
I have one here, because it was easy to carry around.
George Carlin used to say, "When did we get this thirsty?"
Yeah, but I wanted to compliment you, Stu, because I know this is nothing new for the Poughkeepsie Journal. You guys have been working on water crisis issues for years.
We have, and we appreciate the mention. And folks can register at PoughkeepsieJournal.com/event. PoughkeepsieJournal.com/event or call 845-437-4806.
Remember when we lived in Philadelphia, we lived next to we were near a factory, and we found out that we had arsenic in our water. And they came and they tested our water, and they said, if you take it from the bathroom, that's a safe level of arsenic. But if you take it from the kitchen, that's an unsafe level
of
arsenic. I don't know, but I don't know how you can have such a thing as a safe level of arsenic.
There was one district in Dutchess County that had radium in its water.
Yeah, that's not good. And then
my mother says that Canadian Club is the answer to all these water problems.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And you got bubbles.
A bottle of Chivas, and you don't have that problem. Let's go to some other stories that are making news, and that would include there's this interesting poll out about we're going to obviously been talking a lot about President Kennedy. We talked about this yesterday. We're going to hear Alan's conversation today with Congressman Neal, and we are going to continue our series today, and we're going to talk a lot about this tomorrow. Poll out taken this week, which is the anniversary, of course, is tomorrow. 50 years later, no less than 61% of Americans believe others besides Lee Harvey Oswald were involved in Kennedy's murder. This is a Gallup poll. This is actually the lowest percentage in nearly 50 years, but remains a solid majority of the American public believe that there was a conspiracy. The suspects are many, the mob, the CIA, Cuba, and various political interests.
Put me down.
This will never go away.
Well,
ever.
It shouldn't go away.
Ever.
Well, I don't believe it, but I want to believe it. And I think that's why you see those numbers. Most Americans want to think that it was more than just one deranged man who caused such a huge change in America, not just in our government.
Mm. Well, but that's easier to comprehend than a larger conspiracy, isn't it?
No, don't you think it takes something more than one crazy man shooting an arcane gun from an odd position in a school book depository to change everything?
And then being taken out and being
shot
by a guy with known mob relationships.
Correct.
No, I understand that. Yeah. What I'm saying is though, the other way is cleaner. It was one guy, he's dead, we're done.
Do you really think that the Warren Commission, Earl Warren, and all the rest of those guys would have sold out for some nefarious reason? I am one who thinks it's more. I am. Than one guy.
Yeah, I don't think so.
But it's hard to believe.
I don't think it is anymore. I did for a long time, but how many investigations, including a huge congressional investigation, you know, not that long ago, when the evidence could be used.
Which came up and said conspiracy.
No, it didn't.
The one I'm thinking of in the 90s said that it was a probable conspiracy. That if things led to a probable conspiracy and then went to the Justice Department and was not acted upon. I could be wrong on that, but that is my understanding.
But I have told you, and I will tell you one more time, that I knew this girl.
Oh.
Well, it means something to me anyway.
She shot Kennedy?
No, but her father was an official of the Teamsters Union. And when you went to visit upon the girl, you had to talk to the father, who had served, I believe, 8 years in the can. And like Prince Albert. And he... and
we have really lost control.
Okay, okay. But he told me, we shot the president.
We shot the president.
Well, he said, we got rid of him, and we're going to get rid of the brother, he said. Ugh. Now, was he a BS artist? Probably. During that time. So whether he adopted the narrative, as they say in political science, I don't know.
Your girlfriend's father is a more credible source than a commission headed by a Supreme Court justice and other top officials.
Maybe.
You know what? One day
okay,
it'll
good
come
journalism.
Out. One way or the other, it'll come out.
Well, I don't know.
I'm still waiting. If there was a conspiracy, and I can't claim to be any sort of Kennedy assassination scholar or anything like that, but you know what? It's been 50 years now. There will always be a question, but you know what? Can someone just please prove it? Or should we go back that, well, Lincoln was
a
conspiracy?
By the way.
Or Garfield or McKinley or whoever was shot in the early 1900s, was that.
But by the way.
Jerry Ford and Reagan.
That's right. And by the way, when I was in Hunter College, a very fine political science department and history department, they made us read a book called Who Shot Lincoln? And it was about the potential for Lincoln conspiracy. And I think, although I really don't remember, that Stanton came out as the potential bad guy that they were able to point with.
It's just like Kennedy, that it's been a contention for years, and pages out of John Wilkes Booth's diary remain missing to this day, and Stanton had access to it, yeah.
The United States House of Representatives Select Committee on Assassinations that was established in 1976 investigated for several years, issuing its final report and concluded that Kennedy was very likely assassinated as a result of a conspiracy.
That's the 76 one. And then it came in 90, there was another one,
in 1992, correct? Congress passed legislation to collect and open up all of the evidence relating to Kennedy's death and created the Assassination Records Review Board to further that goal. There are some records that will not be released until 2017, from what and then 100 years, even more documents will be released, as well as evidence from the actual.
So it's the 76 congressional hearing that you're looking at.
Yes, but then I believe there was a report in 92, which affirmed the decision. The decision of that committee in 92. So, but anyway, interesting. So it goes on, and obviously we'll be talking a lot more about this tomorrow, as will everyone. Okay, Stu's here. I want to talk about A-Rod.
Talking about conspiracies.
Wow. So yesterday, all of a sudden, our wonderful news director Ian Pickus turned on television and said, "Listen to this." And there was A-Rod on WFAN, and he was at Major League Baseball headquarters yesterday to work on arbitration. Had been there for the past several days, right? To work out the suspension issue, the 211 game doping suspension. And he said he was disgusted with this abusive process. He cursed them out. He got up. He got into his car and he said, "Blank you," and got into his car and went directly to WFAN, went into the studio quite unexpectedly, sat down. It was all very raw, and went to town.
I saw it, actually. I saw the clip. I just thought I'd mention that.
But Stu, what was your impression of it?
No, Stu is the guy.
Well, I was actually in a vehicle yesterday listening on the radio saying, "Wow, where did this come from?" You know, I think it comes down to three things. A-Rod stormed out of that hearing claiming that, in essence, he claimed that baseball and Bud Selig, the commissioner, is out to get him 10 ways till Tuesday.
Is that true, in your opinion?
I don't think so, no.
Okay.
And I don't think that because A-Rod is basically an admitted liar. He lied to Katie Couric about his use of steroids. He had a big press conference in spring training, I believe, in 2009, where he said, "Why, yes, I did take steroids or performing enhancing drugs," after claiming he didn't. I think A-Rod's credibility is honestly, shall we say, lacking at this point.
So he's built a hole for himself?
I think he has not only built a hole for himself, but he will do anything he can to get out of it, because he says, and he's right about this, it's his legacy on the line here, and he feels that Bud Selig is in essence saying Bud Selig's legacy is getting rid of A-Rod and trying to clean up the game of baseball.
Hmm. And he believes that he hates his guts.
Right. He believes it's a total personal vendetta.
And
So yesterday's little performance will enhance his legacy.
Well, this was the great thing that there was a quote, I believe, well, I'm forgetting where I read it, but I guess it was the Washington Post, that said that if the last person to leave an arbitration and leave in such a matter and allow it to go the legal route was Lance Armstrong.
Yes.
And we know how that story ended
yeah,
up.
Yeah. I really wonder about where this is going to go. I mean, this arbitration thing is not a legal situation per se, and that it's not in a courtroom. It's an arbitration hearing. So there's no judge there. It's really a hearing officer. But, you know, A-Rod needs 6 home runs to get $6 million from the Yankees. 6 home runs.
Is so that
he
right?
He will equal Willie Mays at 600.
You mean if he gets in, if he's allowed to continue to play?
If he can play,
yes.
He will not only get his $25 million a year salary, I believe it is, but for hitting 6 more home runs, there's another $6 million at stake.
So is it
plus his contract has about another 5-7 years to go.
So it is a Yankee conspiracy to save money is his contention.
The Yankees have had it with A-Rod. The Yankees have absolutely had it with the controversy, with what they call the lies, with the misleading, with the embarrassment to the Yankees organization. So,
sure.
So I think A-Rod eventually is going to be suspended or will have to serve the suspension. And then it's going to show up in a federal court where someone who does have the power to decide it will in fact say where this is going to go.
Is he allowed to come back? Is it your understanding that after his suspension he's allowed to come back?
Well, his suspension would be in essence for a year and a half. He'd miss a year and a half of baseball.
At
right now,
and he's
right
getting
now, he's
old.
Yes,
or,
he's 38, I believe, 37.
Yeah, so
he's technically suspended right now.
He's almost as old
he was
as
allowed,
me.
What'd you say?
He's almost as old as I am.
That's right.
Yeah, 72.
Can you hit a curveball?
Never
the
could.
Yankees might need a third baseman.
Never could. That's why I was always chosen.
Better yet, can you hit in October?
That's why I was always
yes.
That's why I was always chosen ninth.
Can you tell the truth to Katie Couric? Yeah, A-Rod's. It comes down to A-Rod's credibility. He was talking on the radio about, oh, he missed a birthday for his daughter, and his legacy is at stake here. I mean, the real question, and Mike Francesa asked these questions, did you take these drugs? Did you do this? And
no.
He said, no.
Yeah.
What else is he going to say?
Well, except that it seems to me that with the credibility, Lance Armstrong and all the rest of it, in which they deny, and then it turns out that they did, everybody's rolling their eyes.
Well, Pete Rose did the same thing.
Yeah.
Pete Rose never gambled on baseball for at least 20 years until he said, yeah, by the way, I gambled on baseball. You were right.
I think his mother should just slap him.
And on that note, we're going to say thank you very much for joining us this morning. I think we should just leave the conversations with these Rosemaryisms. I think his mother should just slap him. Thank you very much for joining us. We'll be back tomorrow. Thank you all. Stu, great to have you here.
Always
thank you.
Fun. Thank you, folks.
Rosemary, Alan, thank you. We'll be back after this short break.